agenda here, but my understanding is that you are going to present your annual performance plan to the Department of Defense. You were supposed to do that last week. You asked us to schedule it to this week, which compacted and disturbed our program in a very big way. We are working under very tremendous pressure because of that, but we understood your question that you committed and so on. I think we should start with the presentation. I was meant to understand that Dr. Gamede, you are going to do the presentation today. Can you go on, Dr.
Again, good morning, members, and good morning, Chair. First, just to submit the apologies for the Secretary of Defense. The Secretary for Defense is abroad on defense engagements, and it was a scheduled engagement. We are presenting the annual performance plan for 2017, and we're going to take you through the presentation, and after that I will take questions. For now, the Acting Director of Strategic Management is going to take us quickly through the presentation. Thank you, Chair.
And honorable members, I think they should save us from vision, mission.
Yes.
Constitutional mandate. We are the custodian of constitution.
I've already briefed the presenter that you are lawmakers, so we shouldn't take you through the law.
Yeah.
So we'll just go straight to
the action plan.
Yes, to the but it's important, Chair, that we give you the situational analysis first, the external and the internal environment, because that's the basis on which we plan.
That's where we should start.
Yes. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, may I continue? Thank you, sir. Good morning, Chair, honourable members. Thank you, Acting Secretary. Chair, thank you. I have your direction. We'll move quickly through the presentation. Chair, we won't go through the scope. We'll basically start. You understand the aim we're presenting to the PCD. You understand on slide 5, bottom left, we tabled our APP on the 16th of March as per legislative requirements. As directed by Acting Secretary, we started the situational overview. Chair, you understand our vision and mission. We won't touch on that. Our situation analysis, and it's important that this contextualizes what the business of defense and where we will conduct our business for the 2017 MTEF. Chair, on the external environment from a political perspective, our domestic, regional, and continental security as informed by the National Security Strategy. For the period 2017-18, the DoD will continue to defend and protect the sovereignty of the RSA. Bullet number 2, we will contribute to stability, unity, and prosperity of the Southern African continent in general, and we will continue to support peacekeeping efforts and operations under the auspices of the United Nations and the African Union. Second part, on the economy, we all understand there's lower economic growth facing the country for 2017, which has an impact on foreign investment, and obviously a slowdown in our economic environment, political instability, and obviously the pronouncements by the recent ratings agencies have left an economic challenge for our country. Chair, in general, this impacts on job reductions, strike actions, and the general national security situation in which the defense finds itself, with the possibility of conflict emanating from unemployed youth. Our defense budget allocation. Our budget allocation is approximately 1.02 of GDP, and I believe Chair and the committee has been informed that defense of the opposition, this is not adequate funding for us to execute our legislative mandate. The mandate disjuncture, Chair, is between our current capabilities and the pronouncements of the South African Defence Review 2015, which I believe you took a presentation last week, and we'll touch on this a bit later on. Slide 9, economic. As a department, in terms of implementation of the Defence Review, the department has developed the defence funding model under the direction of the CFO, and that is a model, Chair, that will support defence in trying to solicit additional funding for the defence mandate, and will form one of our anchor points when we discuss with our stakeholders how to move forward with an inadequate budget. And we're also at the same time developing the DoD costing, budgeting and control tool, and this is to ensure the integrity of our financial and costing information. On the technology side, Chair, critical issue internationally as well as for South Africa is current cyber warfare. From an offensive position, the commercialization of big data is one of the current international trends. And to that effect, the DoD during 16-17 has developed a cyber warfare strategy. And the strategy will be submitted to the JCPS for discussion during the 17-18 to solicit funding to fund the cyber warfare initiatives as included in the DoD APP. A defensive perspective, our role as defense is to protect information, big data. We've therefore established the DoD Cybersecurity Incident Response Team that will be established to prevent or recover from an information warfare incident through the establishment of the Cyber Warfare Command Center Headquarters, which is projected for the 18-19 cycle to be established. That has now been submitted to the JCPS for funding consideration. Slide 10, Sustainable Development Goals. As the DoD, we indirectly support Goal 16 of the Sustainable Development Goals, which are a subset of the MDGs, and the goal that we support is Goal 16, to promote peaceful and inclusive societies for sustainable development, providing access to justice for all, and to build effective, accountable, and inclusive institutions at all levels. From a legal perspective, so on the external environment, the DoD will continue with our border safeguarding function, as well as to combat threats of illegal cross-border movement, bullet two, and the SANDF will be required to operate within the requirements of applicable international law. That implies that the SANDF personnel will be involved in operations and must be familiar with international law applicable to those operations. From a climate change perspective, the bottom left, we are aware of the current global climate changes and the impact that it has on weather, patterns, and conditions. The SANDF will increasingly be requested to support in humanitarian assistance and disaster relief during general military assistance operations in the SADC region. Slide 10. From the social perspective, demographic patterns. The world of 2030, Chair, continues to have an aging and growing population. Three major trends will impact. It's the aging populations, it's youthful societies throughout the world, migration that will continue, and growing urbanization. To that effect, cross-border migration is the main task of the SANDF through its borderline initiatives for 17-18, and the SANDF will continue to deploy 15 subunits during the 17-18 period, but we need to remind the committee the full requirement of the National Security Strategy is for 22 subunits and not 15. We are funded for 15 and will deploy 15. Second bullet, health service delivery. Chair, with the reduction of the budget of the SANDF, specifically within the reserve force component, the SANDF permanent force members will be required to have a higher frequency of deployments. And the result of that, in an ever-growing complex and psychologically stressful environment, it leads to emotional stress, social adjustment problems, suicide, and low morale. And that influences our commitments both internally and externally. From social protest, bullet number 3, We expect during 17-18 that the student protests of students requiring access or free education will continue. We expect service delivery protests to also continue during 17-18, and these are all in the build-up to the 2019 national elections. And the SANDF may be required to support the SAPS during this period. National health insurance. The implementation of the NHI program will impact on the SANDF once the rollout begins. And although, Chair, the SANDF is not a public health service provider, it could be argued that the members of the population who are entitled to access to military health services should at least be provided with the minimum standards prescribed for non-funded population of the RSA. And to this point, Chair, we add that the patient population of the SANDF is growing as we now include the military veterans into our current military health service infrastructure. Slide 12. Employment of the youth. We continue to support the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform with the training of the youth, and we will train approximately 2,000 NYS members during 17-18 within our current departmental infrastructure and resources. Internship programs of government. The SANDF in 17-18 will promulgate its DoD internship policy, and while we're developing and implementing that policy, we will absorb 200 interns for the 17-18 cycle. Slide 13. Chair, we've already touched on cyber warfare, so I won't delve further into cyber warfare once more. Slide 14. External deployments. The external deployments of our members will continue as required by SADC, and again, our awareness of the legal implications for actions of deployed forces remains a priority for the 17-18 cycle. And for 17-18, the SAN deployments in peace support operations will continue in the DRC under MINUSCO, and we will have a battalion plus supporting elements supported by the Royal Falk helicopter. The bulk of the SANDF will continue to be deployed at the FIB in the DRC. Slide 15, internal deployments of the SANDF. The SANDF will continue to be deployed in our internal operations in support and cooperation with the police, and primarily we will also be continuing our internal deployments of the SADC Maritime Security Strategy in support of the Mozambique Channel for the prevention of piracy-related activities, and this remains a national and a departmental priority. The bottom bullet, Chair, the Border Management Authority. The DoD will participate. We envisage the BMA will be established during 2017 to prioritize our porous borders, and the SANDF will continue to safeguard the borders in terms of air, land, and the maritime of the RSA. Slide 16. We've touched on border safeguarding, Chair, that we will continue to deploy our 15 subunits during 2017-18. In terms of disaster support, humanitarian assistance, and essential services, we will continue to support drought relief support through the provision of water bunkers and our assistance to provincial disaster management centres as and when directed. Slide 17. This is now our internal environment, Chair, and we won't go through each of these in the essence of time. Primarily, Chair, our primary focus is corruption and fraud, as highlighted on the screen, our supply chain governance, and our financial management will continue to receive attention. On financial management, as the committee is aware and as the department has pronounced for many years, our legacy systems and the non-availability of integrated systems continues to hamper DoD efforts, specifically with the payment of our invoices within 30 days. Under the direction of CFO, we are attending to this, but the department is challenged with our legacy systems. Slide 18, Chair, I believe everyone is familiar with our mandate. Slide 19, 20, 21. Our macro structures, Chair, as you have it in front of you, the same as before, with the exception of the right-hand side, Chief of Staff has now been inserted. The revision, Chair, on page 22, slide 22, of our current mandates There are only three, the first one being the Military Discipline Bill. As we know, Chair, this bill seeks to achieve the constitutional imperative of providing for the proper administration of military justice. The DoD has consulted the JCPS cluster and its developed committee on the 16th of May 2016 and the 7th of June 2016, respectively, and we envisage that by the end of June 2017, the draft bill will be presented to Cabinet for approval in preparation for tabling in Parliament. The second one, the Hydrographic Bill, on the 6th of December 2016, the bill was presented to the JCPS cluster and recommended for further processing to Cabinet during 17-18, which we will pursue. The third and final bill is the Defence Amendment Bill. The bill was presented to and approved by the JCPS cluster for processing to Cabinet, and the draft bill will be presented to Cabinet through the Office of the Minister of Defence during 17-18. Chair, slide 23. I won't go into much detail, as I believe the committee did take a presentation on the defence review last weekend. Safe to say, in the current APP in front of you, we allude to the defence review with two primary objectives of identifying minimal cost-driven interventions, and secondly, our cost-driven interventions, and Annexure D of our current plan also includes all the deliverables that the DoD will pursue that are not funding-driven during the 17-18 process. Chair, we need to highlight on slide 24, bullet number 2, that one of the deliverables for the department is to be able to influence the national mandate paper, as this drives the allocation to national departments. So through the department and the minister, we will be engaging to try and influence this mandate paper to give defence more prominence and a more suited budget allocation. Slide 25. Chair, I think we'll spend a minute or two on this slide. During 16-17, the DoD encountered various challenges that hampered the achievement of the defence's mandate and could possibly continue to impact on our performance delivery during 17-18 MTEF. The first one we will raise, Chair, is the reduction in the DoD HR budget allocation. The reduction of our compensation of employees bill by an amount of $1.89 billion for the 17-18, a reduction of $2.9 billion for 18-19, and $4.8 billion for 19-20 will have an impact on the achievement of our constitutional mandate and, by default, Chair, the security of this country. The absence of a viable exit mechanism complicates the matter further. Through the Secretary for Defence, engagements were held with the DPSA and the National Treasury, and guidelines are still awaited from the DPSA regarding an exit mechanism. Defence awaits those guidelines, and obviously the funding that will have to support such a guideline. Thirdly, Chair, the Commander-in-Chief, government itself, has also not reduced the operational commitments of the SANDF. So although the budget is reducing, our commitments remain what they are. And hence I said the SANDF is under pressure with deployments at this stage. The DoD, however, Chair, will continue to maintain an average strength of 77,500, but our funding only provides for 74,000. There's a disjuncture between the two. And we will continue, Chair, to retain our figure of 2.7 million man days for reserve forces, as this is a feeder to the departmental system as well. But our selected targets will give us a difference, and we'll explain that. Chair, in essence, what the Acting SecDef is saying at the bottom of slide 25, that the department projects a departmental deficit on our budget in 17-18, and we are projecting an over-expenditure on our compensation of employees by the amount of $1.9 billion 17-18, $3.96 billion for 18-19, and an over-expenditure of approximately $3.9 billion in 19-20. Chair, slide 26. With performance delivery, our reserve forces We've spoken about the University Reserve Training Program, the URTP, and it's one of the mechanisms that we use to address the aging current reserve force members and providing sufficient numbers as well as improving the quality of junior leaders. However, a reduction in the compensation of employees, we have fewer reserves, we have fewer reserves to ensure that we address the aging population of the SANDF. Number three, we've already touched, Chair, on the lack of an integrated DOD HR IT system. It's HR, it's ICT for finance, it's logistics, it's the departmental legacy systems in its totality that we are speaking about here. Number four, non-compliance with the regulatory framework. Due to the prevailing resource constraints, progress with the development and the promulgation of the DoD Corporate Governance of Information and Communication System Policy was not made in 16-17, which will guide our ICT system development, but this we foresee will be addressed in 16-17. Chair number five, I've alluded to the delays in the implementation of IFMS together with the lack of appropriate technical support for the current aging departmental legacy systems. This leads to non-integration, unreliability of information, and payment of suppliers, to name but a few. Chair 27, DoD's contribution to national imperatives of government. We understand the Minister's role at the ICTS and the JCPS clusters. Slide 28, we have a direct contribution, Chair, to outcome 3, sub-outcome 3, which speaks to South Africa's borders effectively defended, protected, secured, and well managed. We've indicated in 17-18 we will deploy 15 subunits. At the bottom, we've provided the midterm performance, how we've done thus far at a midterm point. And we confirm, Chief, we have deployed our 15 subunits for 16-17 in support of the border safeguarding strategy. Slide 28, we are now dealing with sub-outcome 4. Secure cyberspace, and our role as the DoD is to contribute to the development of the National Cyber Warfare Strategy and Implementation Plan. Our midterm performance for sub-outcome 4, Cabinet has approved the National Cyber Security Policy Framework in 2012. The cyber security and the cyber crime strategies are work in progress, and the process of drafting national critical information infrastructure regulations has also been initiated. A draft cyber warfare and census strategies have been developed and were presented to relevant stakeholders. We would like to indicate, Chair, that the JPS DG's cluster meeting on the 1st of November last year recommended that the financial implications and funding options be included in the Cabinet Memorandum as directed by the Minister's Implementation Forum for Outcome 3 that took place on the 25th of August 2016. The revised document will be presented to the JCPS Ministers Implementation Forum that was scheduled for the 18th of May, and we will await that feedback. Chair, slide 30, outcome 11, our contribution to sub-outcome 3, political cohesion in Southern Africa to ensure a peaceful, secure, and stable Southern African region. Our midterm performance, Chair, we have contributed as has been expected of us, and we will continue with our anti-piracy patrols in the Mozambique Channel. We have continued to support Ops Mistral in the DRC, Op Copper, anti-piracy as I've alluded to, and we continue to deploy our defense attachés, specifically 10 officers in the SADC region, and we continue to fully engage and support and provide 100% to our SADC pledge requirements. And thus far, we have also 100% compliance with ordered general military assistance operations as a midterm perspective. Chair, slide 31. We indirectly support outcome 2, 5, and 12. The national imperatives, Chair, to which the DoD aligns itself and the basis upon which we've built our APP, the National Development Plan, in terms of youth unemployment, disaster aid and disaster relief, maritime piracy, national research and development, safer communities, capable and developmental state, and obviously the reduction in corruption and fraud. In the center, the national growth path, we support internships, we alluded to that earlier, our National Youth Service, which is again a feeder system to the Department of Defense, which by the way, is also adversely impacted by the reduction in the compensation of employees. And we support the defense industry through the National Defense Industry Council that was established on the 3rd of March 2016. And the far right column, the Industrial Policy Action Plan, is our support given through the NDIC. Chair, slide 33. We've reflected on the FORSOD Action Plan 2014-2019, which the accounting office is expected to support. We do this through the SDIP, and we'll touch on that later on in the presentation. We are pursuing the reduction in the time it takes to fill vacancies from 9 months to 4 months. Our payment of suppliers is an initiative CFO continues to deal with. The finalization of disciplinary cases, our feedback in terms of the anti-corruption hotline, a reduction in our audit findings where they are visible, and the timely submission of our accountability documents being strat plans, APPs, financial disclosures and performance agreements of SMS members. And we will also continue to ensure that our responses to Chapter 9 and 10 institutions receive attention as they have during 2016 and 17. Slide 34, continuing. Chair, we've reflected on the State of the Nation address from 2014 to 2017 as provided by the President and the Commander-in-Chief, and to which we continue to support and align our resources. They include local procurement, and Chair, you will know that the DoD continues to promote local procurement through our decentralized procurement process. And we have also completed a draft procurement policy which awaits completion once the procurement bill has been implemented. We continue to deal with employment of the youth of the RSA. We've alluded to the MSDSs and the internship program that we are supporting. We've touched on the resourcing of the defense mandate. Chair, we spoke about that a little bit earlier and the initiatives we have in place there. The improved implementation of the financial disclosures framework. We continue to ensure submission dates are adhered to, and I believe we are achieving greater successes in that environment. Slide 35, employment of the SNDF in the interim Akirk. The Akirk initiative by the African Volunteering Nations and their defense forces will continue until the end of 18-19, and it's envisaged that by then the African Standby Force will reach its full operational capacity. Spending our funds wisely, the DoD through the CFO, we continue to ensure that our policies and our processes are informed by our cost containment measures, which the department has also implemented stringently a number of years back, and we continue to do so as well. The African continent remains central to our foreign policy engagements, was the SONA of 2016, and the DoD will continue to support peace and security and regional economic integration. And Chair, we also intend this year to promulgate the Defense International Affairs Policy within the Department of Defense. The final one on page 35, Unlocking Growth, Peace Operations, was SONA 2017, and this is the Navy's contribution as part of the SNDF to Operation Pakisa. And Chair, the President mentioned that the departmental preparation will continue during 17-18 to host the government garage concept for all state-owned vessels in Simonstown, including maintenance and repair of these vessels through the newly established South African Navy, Arms Corps, and DNEL partnership. And the DoD will continue to support government ordered commitments in terms of peacekeeping operations and peacemaking initiatives in the region and on the continent. Chair, slide 36, we continue to support the 9-point economic plan in terms of Operation Pakisa. And at the bottom, the rejuvenation and capacity building of the naval dockyard in Simonstown, as well as the envisaged local building of patrol and survey vessels for the South African Navy, will rejuvenate the entire shipbuilding industry within South Africa and set a baseline for future shipbuilding projects that will provide major impetus to the continuing rollout of Operation Pakisa. Chair, slide 37, very briefly. Three columns, the Minister's priorities for 17-18, we've listed them from 1 to 6. The sector focus areas that give direct support to our minister, And then obviously the chief SANDF, his support to the ministerial priorities as well. Slide 38, we just confirmed we have our 8 budget program structures. I'm sure the committee is aware of our 8 program structures. We won't go into that detail. Chair, slide 39, I think, is also a very important slide. In terms of a question was raised by one of the committee members during the presentation of our third quarterly report, that the department was portraying a very positive image of defense and that we were doing well. SecDef at that point indicated that the APP is only what we are funded, but there's a bigger requirement of funding. We've included this slide, Chair, and it's in part of our APP. What it seeks to do, number one, it provides the MTEF spending, how Defence intends to spend its budget over the 17-18 MTEF, and from a force employment perspective, we will continue deploying our 15 subunits. We will have 4 external operations, one which includes the Democratic Republic of the Congo, and the Commander-in-Chief has extended that from 1 April 2017 to 31 March 2018. There will be 2 general military assistance operations in the DRC, and 1 support operation to the Mozambique government to assist with counter-piracy. From a landward perspective, over the next 3 years, Chair, the major thrust will be capability modernization, and there we're looking at the infantry combat vehicles, modern command and communications capability, mobile water purification, and new geographic systems. Air defense, the major thrust over the next 3 years, will be the acquisition of medium light transport aircraft, the acquisition of precision guided ammunition, and establishing a new generation mobile communication capacity. Military health. My apologies, maritime defense, Chair. We will focus on the acquisition of a hydrographic vessel during 1718 and the acquisition of offshore patrol vessels during 1819. Also the upgrading of the naval station in Durban to a fully fledged naval base. And obviously we will continue to support maritime security strategy to the amount of approximately $1.2 billion for the MTEF. Military health support. Chair, an amount of $951 million was reprioritized from goods and services to provide for the comprehensive health care to members of the SANDF, their dependents, and retired military personnel. And I also indicated, Chair, that the medical units also now support the military veterans. Defense intelligence. For the MTEF period, the institutionalizing of the cyber security policy, the implementation of the cyber warfare strategy during 1718, and ultimately the established and resourced cyber command center by 1819. For the general support, in terms of the defense work formation, an amount of $2.3 billion will be spent over the MTEF on the upgrading of buildings in Tabatswane, the construction of houses at the Military Academy, and the renovation of military quarters in Mpumalanga at the Camden Military Base. From an infrastructure perspective, the major focus over the next 3 years will be on the construction and the refurbishment of military health facilities, military bases, and units, and improving accommodation, kitchen, and security facilities. And all of these, Chair, are aimed at renewal and preservation of DoD facilities. So, Chair, in short, over the next 3 years, our major spending will be on maintaining of defense capabilities, expanding and maintaining our DoD infrastructure, safeguarding our country's borders, participating in peace support operations, and finally establishing a cyber security institutional capacity. Chair, slide 40, it's just the distribution of the budget in a graph. I won't go into that detail. Chair, slide 41, very important. This is the slide, Chair, we are indicating to you, and the arrow is on the screen in blue, for each program for the 17-18 cycle. This is the full cost requirement of each program. The second arrow on the screen is the actual budget allocation. And the third arrow, Chair, indicates the deviation or shortfall for 17-18 MTEF per program. In total, at the bottom right, we have a shortfall of approximately 36.1 billion rand for the 17-18 MTEF, which is approximately 42.8% of our budget. Chair, I believe more detail was provided to you during the defence review presentation. Chair, if we can move into slide 44. We've already touched on the compensation of employees. In addition, bullet number two, we had a further reduction by the National Treasury in terms of our goods and services to the amount of 109 million for 17-18, 98 million for 18-19, and 125 million for 19-20. These will be on our property payments, a reduction in our maintenance capabilities, and obviously a reduction in consultants and catering. Chair, slide 45, we've already touched on all of these on the presentation I made earlier, so Chair, we can move past slide 45, we can move past 46, 47, 48, and 49. Chair, very briefly, we just confirm our selected performance indicators, which we've agreed to with the National Treasury and the Presidency. We foresee no change in the performance indicators, but in the targets themselves, we've mentioned the MSDSs. There will be a reduction from approximately 4,000 down to 3,500 in the outer 1920 of this current MTEF. Slide 54, Chair. We confirm links to other plans, Arms Corps, which we won't deal with here, Cost Control Board, we won't deal with. Slide 57, we reflect on our consultant utilization, which continues to show a year-on-year decline in the utilization of our consultants. Chair, slide 59, moving towards the end of our presentation, we confirm the 17-18 enterprise risks that the department is dealing with. Number one is the continuing deterioration of DoD facilities and infrastructure. Number two, our reliability and our verifiability of our performance information due to our legacy systems that are not integrated. Slide 60. Risk number three is the increase in fraud and corruption, where we will be dealing with our internal controls, and all the risk responses are outlined on the right-hand column. And our last two risks, Chair, is our high prevalence of litigation. Number five, the emergence and prevalence of cyber warfare threats, and I think we've dealt with that adequately during the presentation as well. Chair, we just reflect on slide 62, our MPAT, and we continue to see our performance in terms of our management performance assessment, but this will be dealt with during the fourth quarterly report. Chair, our SDIP, we will be dealing with four main issues on slide 63 in terms of SDIP, and this is the promotion of access to information where we want to ensure that all requests are completed. Number two, in terms of procurement, that we are efficient, effective, and economical in our procurement processes. Number three, HR acquisition, to ensure we do our staffing and complete it within 90 days. And four, our disciplinary cases, that we will endeavour to finalise these within 90 days as well. Chair, I believe that brings us to the end of the presentation, and I will hand over back to Acting Secretary.
Thank you very much. Thank you, very comprehensive. Now, let us just put the record straight over for the record's sake that the presentation you made on the defense review in the joint standing committee should not be confused with the presentation you make here. It will be, for record's sake, these are two different committees. Now your defense review presentation, now you are doing it in the portfolio committee. That should be the understanding. Honorable members, over for you to you for questions of clarity. Honorable Kamede. Honorable Murray, you follow Honorable J.J.'s Kosana, you follow.
Thank you, Chair. Greetings to everybody, especially the acting sector and the whole team. Chair, because we have the acting sector, I'll ask some very simple questions. The first one is, in this plan, why do we plan for something that we are sure we're not going to implement? I take on slide 12, you plan to employ 2,000 youths. I can put my head on the block that you won't be able to implement this. This is because you're required to cut the budget. You've just said in the presentation that the tasks remain the same, but the budget has been cut. And we have been able to employ such a number. And, you know, even in the presentation, even about the defense review, generally we must cut down the force. So I want us to reconcile the two. We don't want the department to come in and say it will do this, and we can see that it is not realistic. Then we find them next year when you are here. So I want the guarantee so that when you come here, that with this budget that you have, that you have cut, you are going to be able to employ the 2,000 youth. On slide 21, there's this organogram. You know, they say little things matter most. In this structure, I don't see specifically the deputy minister. You have the ministry. Even if the deputy minister was part of the ministry, but practically you have to show it in the structure. So it might have some unintended consequences for the department. On slide 25, you plan for over expenditure for the MTEF. Just consciously and purposely plan for that, that we are going to overspend. But you don't plan to arrest that situation of overspending. And the committee then must say, oh, we'll allow you to overspend in the next 3 years. That is really very much uncomfortable because you know that you must, first you must plan with what you have. Don't plan with the money that you don't have, because you're creating even an accounting challenge for the department. And then on slide 35, you talk about payment of suppliers with 30 days. Now, it's the third year we've been hampering on this. At one stage, the sector gave us an example that he had to intervene because an order of meat that was supposed to be 80 rands per kg was 800 rands a kg. So they were sorting out. Now, this is because this has got an impact on SMMEs who are not being paid and their businesses are closing by the department. And very soon this committee will be submitting these names of companies which the department is purposely not paying, not even within 30 days. Others run to about 200 days. So this issue, in your plan, you must really have a target, and which is achievable. On slide 34, about local procurement, It is not clear for me, and I'm sure for this committee, because that statement is too general. It doesn't come out clear to address the imbalances of the past. Because once you say local, it includes everybody, even those that are far away, as long as they are local. So it would be nice to have a statement that says on procurement would prioritize the HDIs and the previously disadvantaged local people. I think that should be in your plan. On slide 89, on defense intelligence, I see 39. Yeah, no, I wrote the wrong slide. But there's where you're planning about defense intelligence, that you'll do a strategy, you'll do something until 2019. My worry is just this weekend we had a crash on cyber attack, and hundreds and thousands of information was crashed. Now, as a department, we are going to wait until 2019 because this cyber thing is now. It's happening now, and if you don't move with speed, you lose all your information in the department, more especially the classified information that you sent it in. Still on that question, can't you be working together as government with other departments? You can't have another department dealing with this issue of cyber attack and this one, so we work in silos. Look at a plan of sharing this thing, because one department might have it now and you don't have it. So just look at shared services if you can do that. Let me stop there for now.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you for the presentation. I want to start off by what the chairperson said, that we assume that what was given to us on Friday and the realities and what you're giving now to us must talk to each other. If not, then we are busy with different plans and different strategies. I want to support my colleague in terms of we can have, you know, pie in the sky plans. Paper is very patient. You can put anything on paper. How wonderful, you know, this ideal world that we want to achieve to and aspire to. But we know that's not a reality. You've alluded to the economic outlook over the medium term, and I would even go so far as to say the long term. And it's unlikely that we will have a much bigger GDP as we've got at the moment. And although we support you fully with the idea that we need to have at least a 2% of GDP budget, we know that that's not going to happen. I recall what the CFO said on Friday when we talked about the staff component, which needs to be closer, or, you know, the target must be 40% of expenditure, and we're now at about 57%. And he said that because of the budget cut, that portion is now bigger. That's true. That assumption, and that is very honest and true. The reality, however, is that because the economy is not growing, because the nature of our needs for a defense force has changed dramatically from even, you know, in the early 2000s, and even when the arms was procured that we've got at the moment, everybody talks about the arms deal in the past. Things has changed dramatically. We have seen in the graph the other day that in terms of threats, South Africa is relatively protected from those threats that you find in Central Africa and even further on. So in other words, our needs have changed. And it's quite evident that national security, our national treasury has said, because we see that as well, or they see that as well,
that clearly you don't need the money that you want. And I think, and I've said the other day, what is government's strategies and key deliverables at the moment? And that is not an ideal defence force that we want. So I think the realities, and there I want to agree with my colleague who spoke to me earlier, before me. You have to take that into consideration. You will not get a defence force that you require. We know that we've got equipment and infrastructure and even military bases and staff that we will not require in the execution of our duties. And I think the most important ones that I've picked up is obviously the involvement in Central Africa peacekeeping missions, COPPER, APISA, and then border safeguarding. Now, yesterday I attended the budget speech of state security, and they were also talking about cyber warfare, also about protection of cyber. And as my colleague has said, who's driving this? It seems like it's from your presentation that this is a defence force responsibility. What I've heard yesterday, it is their responsibility. Now, is it their responsibility? Is it defence force? Is it science and technology? Clearly, you know, and there, in terms of your presentation, we must know that. Because what is the implication, the financial implication for DoD? Is it going to be nothing? Is it going to be, operating the equipment? Is it the development? Or is it the identification of the threats? What is the practical implication for the DoD, and how will that affect your budget? I'm just thinking quickly. Even if you look at the units, the border safeguarding, just correct me, you constantly talk about 15 units. Is it correct that we actually have 45 units? 15 on the ground, 15 at the base, and 15 in training? Because we constantly talk about only 15, but we need to know how many are we talking about. I accept the fact that there's at any given time 15 feet on the ground, if I can use that phrase. But what is the practical implication of that? Because constantly people want to say and equate the cost to 15 units, but it's actually more than that. So just give us that reality as well. In the administration, and you've I think pointed out that one of the key things that you want to focus on is financial management. Financial management. That's one of the three that you've identified: supply chain governance, financial management, and corruption and fraud in terms of the internal environment. But financial management is probably the one with the biggest real cut in real terms. So, if you're already now struggling with the 30 days, if you're already now struggling with certain procurements and compliance, with a in real terms cut of about 25%, how will that affect you? Because surely, financial management is crucially important. We cannot be here in a year's time and then say, we have now missed our targets, we have missed this because of the cut in financial contributions or the allocation to financial management. We need to know that. Last week, we've passed that slide just quickly, where last week it was indicated to us in terms of milestone one, there are five work packages that was indicated. And it was indicated that, we basically need about 50 billion additional to the budget allocation. Are any of those been included in this deviation of 36 billion that you are talking about? Because we don't know what what is included in that 84 or nearly 85 billion rand that you've indicated at the real cost for you to operate that? Is that including arresting the decline, or is that additional to that? My concern is, here you say you actually need, for the Defence Force to proceed in terms of the operations and activities, you actually need 36 billion rand additional. At one stage, I would actually very much have appreciated it if you would have informed us how would that 85 or that extra 36 billion impact on your abilities to defend the country, to do the work that we need to do. Last week it was indicated that in terms of the trend, the current trend, and that graph, that model that they've used, shows that in 5 years' time we end up at zero. So in other words, no defence force. And that's serious. That's incredibly serious. So somehow one must address those realities. And obviously within the current budget allocations, one must see how that will contribute to that. The one thing that I am not appreciating very much is that you always say us, we do this because we're instructed to do this. We actually want you to come to us and say, with the current budget, what can we effectively do? Not idealistic, not to put the good books of the president or the minister, but realistic. Because where do we cut? What do we focus on in terms of a budget that we've got? Is it that we will stay in DRC come hell or high water? In other words, we might have nothing back in South Africa, but we will have troops in Africa. Can we still afford that? Is that viable? Please talk to us about that, because that's where we need to assist you. And I cannot see that what we are doing currently is in support of that. In Operation Pakisa, you have only referred to the implications of development of dockyards and shipbuilding. But Operation Pakisa, in my understanding, goes much further than that. That's the ocean economy. That's the blue economy. Do you need any surveillance aircraft? Do we need any more patrol vessels? Because remember, when you talk about that, we have heard here last week that there's no single aircraft available in 35 Squadron. We have heard that there's only two C-130s in South Africa. Now, do we need things like that? What do you suggest? How would we replace aircraft at 35 Squadron? Or don't we need air surveillance or sea border patrol? You have referred to international obligations. You haven't mentioned how we're going to do our duty in the Southern Seas, around the southern tip of Africa. Those are international obligations, as far as I am aware of. And those, we have seen last year, those Chinese vessels, those fishing vessels that came in right to the coast. We haven't seen that. Is that not important? And that leads to my assumption that it seems like there is a certain ideal world that you achieve to. And then you only touch on those that might be popular. You know, the president wants us to be in Africa, so let's be in Africa. Let's forget about the rest. Your first priority is protection of South Africa's sovereignty. And irrespective of how wonderful our involvement in DRC is, that is not protecting our sovereignty. That's not protecting our borders. That's not protecting our sea borders. That's not assisting in growing the ocean economy. Not at all. Anybody that tells you that lives in the cuckoo land. And we have to be realistic about this. Also, where you say that the Defence Force operating in support of the all those three: National Development Plan, the Minister Patel's program, etc. You know, how are we doing this? Is it what is the role of the Defence Department of Defence? We know that there's that the DTI is also involved in driving with the industry players in terms of manufacturing and creating jobs. But you've put this as if that is a crucial function of the Department of Defence. What is your role in that? Is that the commitment to procure from those companies? In other words, what's the financial implication? Because you can put a lot of things on paper, but we need to know, in terms of this budget, how does it impact on that? Is it only a paper exercise, or what is the financial implications? Chairperson, in terms of air defence, we have seen that there's a huge reduction in, I think, the allocation to air defence. But what we have not seen, last week I have indicated on a question that, for instance, 5,000 flying hours was budgeted for this financial year. At the end of the third quarter, I think it was only 2,700 hours that was used, of which 155 for VIP. And I think VIP was budgeted for 1,000. But you see, most probably a further reduction in those hours in terms of the budget cut, the real budget cut. If we talk about real terms, we talk about the official inflation. And we have agreed last week that the defense inflation is probably not less than about 12%. So that will even have a further and a much more severe reduction in that. And we need to know how, with the current budget, you will address those critical things about border control and border patrol. Chairperson, there are so many questions that one can ask, but you can work on a model, which is a hypothetical thing for me. You can also work on targets that you've met. That's just ticking the boxes. For me, it is, what is the critical objectives and the duties of the Defence Force, and to what extent can we fund that? We do not have the funding model. And without a funding model, if there's an adequate funding model, you can obviously do this budget. You can do this with no problem. But we do not have a funding model at this stage. All that we've got is a cut in the budgets, an indication by the National Treasury that they are not happy with the way that you have responded. The indication, what my colleague has said, you can talk about all these targets for employment and rejuvenation, but I do not see any indication of how you're going to reduce the number of employees. And whether we say it is because the budget cut has been smaller, so the percentage of employees are higher, it can be true, but it's not going to solve our problem in terms of bringing human resource costs within boundaries so that you have enough funds to actually do what the Defence Force is supposed to do. I've asked last week, and Doctor, I think you've heard my question, I think last week as well. We need to know, what type of Defence Force do we really require in South Africa of today? Not 10 years ago when we procured the arms and the aircraft. I have, for instance, seen here nothing that we actually need our fighter aircraft. Yes, we might need, and we might agree that you need a small contingent of aircraft. So I see a need for machinery and equipment, but I do not see any feedback information about the underutilization of facilities and equipment. We know that there are Air Force bases that is basically shelved, and it's a cost to reopen that. We know that there are military bases, even in infantry, where we have said that quite clearly we must look at kind of putting them together and see how best we can have fewer bases but more efficient and effective bases. We have experienced at Ninesai the other day the huge problems in terms of safety and security. We have seen the huge problems at Silver Mine last year in Simonstown in terms of theft of arms, but also of critical stuff like antennas. You haven't indicated at all to us how you're going to address those problems. Because if you don't have a communication system and you have to make use of the private sector's communication systems, that's an indictment on a defense force. It means that it cannot even protect itself. How the hell can the citizens then have trust that you will protect them? And we need to address those things. Without those things, this is a wishful thinking plan. And that is not what we need to do. We need a defense force. But what kind of defense force do we really need? Chairperson, there are so many questions and one can go on and on and on. But I think some of them we have asked last week. And I've got lots of questions, so maybe in the second round. But that's it for the moment. Thank you. Their responses, please.
Thank you very much. No, this is not the first interaction with this APP. I'm still going to ask you a lot of questions as the year goes on. So we should not be stressed by that, Honorable Members. Honorable Judges, Honorable.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, I am not going to consume a lot of your time by summarizing every issue page here. I've got only three issues that I want to dealt with. One, Chairperson, cyber security needs collective efforts from various departments in the security cluster. What plans do you have as a department to contribute to the collective to fight the cyber crime? Because it's there, we must be ready, we must be on the ground to fight it. Secondly, Chair, is the policy of the government for the implementation of NHI. And on the presentation on slide 11, I heard that there will be a difficulty for the department during the implementation. Can I just get an explanation on that impact? Because the policy, that must be implemented. And the strategy thereof, a plan of making sure that it doesn't have hiccups when it is implemented, particularly on you as a defense. The last one, Chairperson, there are a number of issues that are presented before us here, and some are negative, some are positive. Now, I want to get to the increase in fraud and corruption in the department. We said in our policy we are going to fight crime, fraud, corruption, and everything that related to crime. But if you report an increase of fraud and corruption, you need to report also about the plan of fighting that corruption within the department. Can't just be an increase, it should be a decrease. This year we're talking about increase. Next year we must talk, or next time when you come back here, we must talk about a decrease, because you might have a plan to cap that, not to have it. And all those who committed a crime, I should think we, in the near future, will be getting a report of how did you deal with all those who are involved in crime. Unlike to packing problems of a crime to be huge in the department without any implementation, without any completion of their cases. I think in the near future we'll get more chair on this, but let's get a plan of dealing with this thing. Thanks.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I think any department has a challenge in balancing its act of what is a very important priority and how one funds that, and also to sustain the current operations that are also essential for the institution. What we have seen is that there's been talk about a funding model. Essentially, it is increasing the fiscus and the budget allocation, but the actual revenue that needs to be generated by the department and its entities has not been yet tabled for us for consideration. So that affects a number of issues like the dockyard, the Bakisa model, the peace missions and trade in Africa, Arms Corps switching assets, the IP and production of the NEL and Arms Corps, the refurbishment of defense material and the sale of obsolete material that could be sold or used in other countries, and of course joint ventures with other countries in developing IP and also armaments. We haven't heard anything really on that score, so I don't see anything under the category of income generating revenue of the institution itself. So those are the matters which is concerned for me. We're going to complain, and it is still a decision that Cabinet must consider, and that will go to Treasury for consideration, and I hope the plan that is currently in place that speaks to the defense review and the costing of all the particular work packages and the programs over the next 25, 30 years, that will be given certain serious consideration, and also the paper, the mandate that must reprioritize the department. Coming back to our issue of the department itself and its plans for this coming year, Chair, the BMA is legislation that will be passed shortly, and the implication of that is it will cost about $22 billion to implement, whereas there's an indication made that if $3 billion was given to defense, they could secure the borders and also accomplish the task. And of course, we speak about deficiencies of coordination and networking between the various departments that are responsible for borders or border posts specifically, because the borders itself, they are manned and patrolled by Defence Force. However, the border post will be managed by the BMA. Was that cost-benefit analysis done, and was a consideration given to the SANDF increasing its role and its 22 companies to cover all border posts and the cost implication of that, which means we would have a much tighter border control than what we have currently? Even if this BMA is implemented on border post, it still leaves us with porous borders of 15 companies, which are insufficient for covering the entire borders of South Africa. So I just want to know what was really the input of SANDF, which is critical in this regard in protecting our country. The other one is when we refer to the any report, we look at the enterprise risk on page 30 and slide 59, 60, and 61. There are five risks mentioned. Now, we speak about deterioration of facilities. Now, we've reported that it's in the Defense Service Commission for years and years and years. We have not seen the allocation being made and a commitment that will boost the morale and facilities of our soldiers. That is 1.5% of the value of a property needs to be put aside for maintenance and repairs. There's no indication in this budget of that at all. But I will come back later to the last two pages of the E&E that speaks to capital expenditure on infrastructure, where a number of commitments have been made and we can see what has actually been allocated for completing projects. The second one, of course, is non-reliable and verifiable DoD performance information. Now, those are critical things. How can we operate in an environment where nothing is certain? Nothing is reliable. How does one really work? You can only measure yourself if you've got reliable data. You can only plan ahead if you've got reliable data. How can we operate in an environment that is non-reliable? So I'm saying if ICT is fundamental for this institution to move forward, to prevent crime and corruption and fraud and everything else, And the IFMS, Integrated Financial Management System, is essential to make this a real effective organization, then those things become a serious priority. Not only a priority, because it's fundamental for the effective operation of this institution. So I think this will be recurring because it's not being dealt with effectively. So we can expect the consequences if you have a lack of an effective ICT system and platform. The next one is the increase in fraud and corruption. That I can understand. If you tell me that system is not in place, the consequences are very clear. It can be manipulated. It can be interfered with manually. Others can get into the system. Where are the permissions kept? I think then we come to the fourth one. The fourth one is the high prevalence of litigation. Now, we've spoken to that. We've asked what are the expected outcomes of the cases. There's some cases that are running into millions of rands. That's besides DMV's litigation processes, which is even greater than its budget. What is the exact position on this? And what measures have been put in place? And what contingency? Because I didn't see any contingency. If we deal with litigation, there needs to be contingency. There needs to be anticipation with a legal recourse, and we should have legal input to advise us of what is the status of the case and the chances of success. The last one of the risk is the emergence and prevalence of cyber warfare that was discussed at length. I'm not going to repeat that. Now, Chair, I want to come back. Also, I'd like to know, I've seen the other report on page 17, which sketches the internal environment and also the challenges within that environment, which is financial management, which is internal audit, the independent audit committee, and all the other things. And all these committees and management as dependent on a sound ICT system that underpins the institution. We will continue to complain about those issues if we don't sort it out. So the impact, we'd like to have the impact report by our next meeting to see what is the status and improvement of this department in terms of its governance, and that covers the four major areas, level 1 to level 4. The policy research unit, I've seen on the screen, it will be implemented, and that is a very key important unit that will assist in addressing issues by doing proper scientific research and evidence-based research that will give guidance to the institution. So it's a very urgent matter that we have a proper policy research unit in this institution. Also, from the last one, we had 89% SMS performance agreements that were signed. They were still outstanding. This year, the anticipation is that it should be executed in the first month of the new financial year, which is April. And I hope we got 100% signed already. We're in May. The other one is disciplinary cases. Of course, it's more than 90 days. There is an intention to reduce it, but we'd like to know what are actually the problems that's causing the delay and that the performance is so poor. And that's PSAP cases, not the soldier cases, the PSAP cases. Of course, this department complains about audit fatigue and the internal external assurance providers. There were only two scope meetings that took place. So if it is a critical matter, we expect more meetings to take place to deal with the issue. When we come to the issue of the healthcare facilities, we've seen that has been reduced, and also the allocation is a problem. Although in the DMV side, we see there's been a huge increase, and the DMV, the soldiers, military veterans, are paying for their services. The complaint that I've heard from 2 mil is that the paperwork is not always in order, and there's a delay of the payments taking place to 2 mil, which also causes a problem in terms of their financial liquidity. So if that can be discussed, the issue of a reduction on one side and an increase on the other side, it is so bad that it was 45% 2 years ago, the medical stock, that it became an embarrassment and is now classified. Classified at the risk of our soldiers. We said if we treat the soldiers as the normal hospitals, which are running at 50% or less, then what are we inviting and attracting individuals to the Army and Navy and Air Force to? We need to offer a better service. They are in the front line and they're protecting our country. So The other one that we have, Honourable Chair, is of course, we saw the modernization, sustainable DoD ICT integration prime system capability. Only 14.51%, and the plan target was 22.88%. That's miserable. We come to the, okay, I've spoken about the other one of the military bases also. We'd like to know the status of our military bases. If they are NKPs, I asked that question before, it means they fall under an act of law and they have certain securities. Because at this moment, our military bases are like going to a shopping mall. People walk in and out and take what they want. It is not treated as a high security military operation and institution. We'd like to know what is the exact status of our military bases and that be given the proper status. The issue which I have a problem is the military discipline bill. We have a reduction in the military police, and that is normally the people that keeps discipline and maintain discipline and order within the defense. We've seen a reduction in that. And the military discipline bill, I see it is planned to be introduced. We have been insisting that this be done as soon as possible because there are problems if that bill is not in place and it cannot regulate the behavior of soldiers. So we, from the committee side, we have urged the department to get on with the job so that we can consider that bill and make it an act. The issue also of, if I'm looking at the Pakisa and the issue of the Coastal Guard, who is responsible for the Coastal Guard? What is the involvement of the SANDF and also the issue of environmental affairs that deals with hydrographic vessels, etc., and also to do with the other departments of trade and industry or forestry and fisheries and agriculture, which also have vessels on the sea? What is the cooperation and coordination between SANDF and others that are also responsible to some extent for the waters and for Pakisa as well? There's a number of strategies that are outstanding that we actually want some report on. The one was raised already, of cyber. We've seen how far that is now and when it's planned to be introduced. The issue of defense diplomacy strategy that has been spoken about for a while, defense industrial policy and strategy, the border safeguarding strategy, which will affect the BMA and how that is coordinated because it falls border and border post. And then we've got the joint force employment strategy. Those are all issues that were mentioned and discussed, but it has not been given any deadlines and actually timeframes for its completion. There's been increases in the landward defense. We've seen that increase. And I'm asking also the other ones that are supposed to come online, which there's an indication of by the presentation, is the issue of Project Biro, Project Hotel, Project Hoofeister are all now due for delivery. And therefore, there are certain increases which I note in the certain sub-programs. Is that the case, or does it fall under the SDA? Is it considered strategic and under special defense account, or does it fall with the increases that we see in the sub-programs? The other issue we come to is the air defense. I think that has been spoken about. The maritime defense in terms of the hours and the huge reduction. The huge reduction in air defense by 10.56%. And how does that impact on the currency of pilots? If they don't fly the number of hours, their license to fly becomes a problem, and that's why some of them actually left the Air Force to join the commercial airlines so that they don't lose the currency of their license. This particular reduction in the program, how does it impact on that? We've seen the maritime, yes, but the maritime got some increase. The admin is down. Then, of course, we look at the HR issue, which is a serious problem, which we discussed under the defense review and under the five work packages. And we can only see the situation becoming worse unless drastic action is taken. There's supposed to be a reduction of 9,000 soldiers. And if we persist that we're going to continue with it, it means that the bill is going to be over expenditure on the bill. We know that's going to happen. Secondly, if we allow people to leave, what are the packages? And to speak about the MEMS, and there's no consideration, I believe there is one MEMS or something happening, but we've asked for the MEMS. that we had to give consideration to all possibilities. Besides natural attrition, what did the department actually come up with? I believe the committee will be going to Cuba, and that is one of the objectives, is to engage the Cuban defense and on their MEMS program as well. So we'd like to know exactly what, because this department is not seeming to make any move in terms of that. There's no drastic move at all. So rejuvenation become a problem, FZDS become a problem, reserves become a problem, everything else become a problem because of that decision. There's no rejuvenation taking place within the force. The issue of the financial services, we know that's down by 25.82%. What are the implications of that? Religious services, that the chaplaincy, is there any impact it has on the deduction of 16.64%? Then we go down to the, of course, defense reserve direction. I spoke about defense force, number of reserve days. We've seen that as well being reduced. And it's been reduced, the budget for that, by 8.5%. The department direction, which has a direct impact on the defense review, has increased by 8.95%. What is the role of that increase in the departmental direction? What is the way will it be used, that extra money, to execute something more quickly? The other concern we have is a big concern. We all speak about it. Is the issue of consultants. The consultants from 49.9 million has increased to 62.4 million. And in 2015-16, the consultants were only paid 8.5 million. So there's a huge increase over the last 3 years. Who are exactly these consultants, and why is the department highly dependent on these consultants to spend so much money? The operating leases have also increased. We just want some clarity on that, from 1.2 to 1.3 billion. Operational payments, that has also increased, 23.7 million to 37.7 million. Okay, then we have, I don't know how this is decided, but I think we've raised it before. In terms of your own presentation, you speak about the morale of it being challenged, and the Defense Service Commission corroborates that with the facilities, with the conditions of service, etc. But we find here that the public opinion and the morale seems to be a different issue. The public opinion speak about the 75%. How is that assessed? All these soldiers are complaining. So somebody's is this assessment done with people that probably had no contact with the Defense Force or anybody? So how is that actually determined? And that is actually decreased from last year from 77 now to 75%. The military court cases are standing at 40%. We've asked about the military judges. How far is that situation? And that we're dealing with it, are we dealing with it effectively and trying to increase and dealing with the backlogs that we have? The defense attaches was 46 last year. It's now 44. What happened to the other two? Or what were the plans for the other two? When we come to the issue of the border safeguarding, there's been a reduction by 17.89%. Sub-program support to the people, border safeguarding is included in that. How does this impact on the border safeguarding? Regional security, that has increased 12.69%. We'd like to know why. Because the number of peace missions have actually been reduced. There's only the DRC Monusco, then there's the SADC region, that is a commitment, and the maritime security of the anti-piracy program. The issue there is also the intelligence have not given us a clear indication of what the real threat is within the Mozambican channel. Do we maintain the same level of security and patrol, or do we lower that and also decrease the cost? The bill at the moment to DRC is 1 billion, and that's been extended to 2018, and the bill of the other one is 71 million. The contractors under Program 2 has also increased from 331 to 366 million. Who are these people? The machinery has increased. Maybe we can give an indication what machinery, 22 million to 181 million. Doubled. It doubled. The fuel, oil, and gas that has been reduced tremendously, 69.6 to 47.7 million, a huge reduction. What is the impact it has on the force employment? The land with defense, we find that the air defense here, artillery has increased, infantry has increased, and the infantry capability is that particular in relationship with the Oof-Easter project. The other one is, of course, operational intelligence on landward defense has decreased by 11.81%. Now, when we reduce intelligence, as our colleagues have alluded to, the cyber warfare and security issues, how does it impact on our intelligence? If we're reducing that, what capability are we impacting on? The compensation of employees, we know that has been reduced, and we've seen the challenges on the board that, of course, you'll have to explain. The other one under P3, the contractors have been reduced, so that's good news for us. At 335 million to 218 million, there's been a reduction. The other one, of course, is, let me go on to program 4. We've spoken about the air combat capacity, which has been reduced by 23.16. What's the impact on that? And also on the performance of our pilots. And also on the Air Force itself. We see operational direction has also been reduced by 23.28. What is the impact of that? Similarly, strategic direction. We find here that the increase in the contractors, slight increase of 1.2 billion, to 1.3 billion. S&T has reduced tremendously under this program. Program 4, 581 million to 83.5 million. A huge reduction. The issue is, does it impact on the department in doing its work, or people that needs to be sent for training, or people that have to attend special meetings? Why is this such a huge reduction? I expect a reduction that is cost saving and austerity measures. But why such a huge amount? If we continue with that, Chair, we look to Program 5. We've spoken briefly of Project Bayrotel. There's been indication on that. The Maritime Combat, we've said it's increased by 13.4%. Base support, however, base support has been reduced by 9.87%. Now, that's under Maritime. So the Maritime Defense deals with the refurbishment also of Durban Naval Base. What is the impact on completing that naval base? There's been spoken about. There's been no time frames given for it to be completed. And we also spoke about that base being a launching pad also to deal with the issue of piracy and the vessels being available closer to that area instead of being sent from the dockyard in Simonstown. Okay, so just to give us an idea of that. Also, we see there's an increase in oil, fuel, and gas, which is from 19.1 to 73.1 million. Okay. A huge increase on the maritime. Exactly where will this be used? Okay, we've got the issue of military health support. We find here the military health, of course, there's been an increase in special services. Strategic direction, that is down by 20.2%. Military health maintenance is reduced by 17%, although I will refer later to the infrastructure cost, where there's also issues of when these things will be finished, under 1 mil, 2 mil, etc. The outsourced services increased tremendously. Now, under health, we've had an engagement with 2 mil, we had engagement with 1 mil, and clearly the problem is that whatever capabilities is lacking is now being outsourced at a huge cost and even over expenditure of the budget. How is that going to be arrested and be dealt with? There's also that program of RUMP that has now been going for more than 10 years at a huge cost to the institution. So it's standing at 283 million at increase to 433 million. The contractors also have increased from 59.4 million to 81.6 million. Who are these contractors that have now been included and also the outsourced services? Medicines have also been reduced, 235 million to 155, by 80 million. by 80 million. So we are asking the question, although there's reimbursement from the DMV side, military veterans, there will be an increase of registration of military veterans also with the military hospitals for services. So the activities have been reduced, the members have been increased, and more services will be required by the military vets. How is this balance? How is this being dealt with? If it was at 45% the stock in 2 years, more than 2 years ago, 3 years ago, what is the situation now? We have the issue also of the defense intelligence. I think we've, most of those things we've listened to also with the state security. Also, yes, outsourced services, that is from 200,000 increased to 12.8 million. What is that actually being used for in defense intelligence? Maybe that can give us some clarity on the cyber warfare issues, etc. The SNT has also increased 5.4 million to 8.9 million. Why? That's normally a very small sub-program that we have. Under Program 8, there's a general decrease of 4.4%. The departmental support has increased, however, by 14%. So what is the implication of departmental support? Technical development has decreased by almost 20%. And the defense review and the defense force moving in a more technological way, what is the impact of reducing the technological development program by 20%? I mentioned before also military police is down by 10.1%, joint logistics services down by 5.6%, and of course the problem again under Program 8, contractors have increased of 123.4 million to 159 million. Who are these contractors and why do we increase those contractors? Of course, training and development, that is up by 42.9 million to 80.5 million. In other areas, it's down. But under Program 8, it is up to 80 million. Can we have some clarity on where exactly it will be used in the development and training plan? The criminal cases is a sad situation. It's been reduced, the investigation, from 50% down to 25%. We thought that would be more effective, as Honorable Suskar has mentioned, about crime, corruption and fraud as being key issues that we need to try and resolve as speedily as possible. Also, the crime prevention activities, 2 years ago it was at 248, that's down to 124. So it doesn't speak to the issue of crime, fraud, corruption, if we are reducing the activities. I think, Honorable Chair, that will be Program 8. I think the last one is just the procurement policy, which we spoke about briefly, that we'd like to also see that new policy. That policy is not being implemented yet. It's been completed. It's supposed to be implemented, and that we'd like to have some sight of that policy. So the investigation of corruption cases is standing now at 66%, and there's an indication that it will be 100% this year. So is that being very optimistic in light of the past performance, or is the department capable of doing it, lacking the ICT systems that underpin speedy investigations? Is it being realistic to put it at 100%? I think that will be all for now, sir. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Members. So what do you expect to do?
Thank you, Chair. I must admit that I thought I could write fast, but I almost lost track. So if there are questions that are not answered, members should just remind us, but we're all taking notes. Firstly, on the issue, I'm just going to check those that I can answer myself and then direct my colleagues. On the issue of cyber...
Some of the answers, questions will be similar by character.
Yes.
I hope you would group them and give one answer.
Yes.
And so on.
On the issue, say, for example, of cyber, all the cyber security issues, yes, we do work together with state security. We contribute to the program of action, And we have indicators that are for defense and the indicators that are for state security and other security cluster departments. We have been in all these departments, sir, there is challenges of funding of cyber. We have reported to the implementation cluster, the cluster ministers, and we, as cluster departments now, when I say we, as the security cluster departments, we are actually working on a CAP memo that will indicate all the cost requirements, total cost of implementing the cybersecurity framework, and that will go to cabinet. The JCPS cluster, at the last, I think last two DG cluster meetings, they dealt with that CAP memo. So yes, we are working together, and we are making the cost visible to cabinet. Each department has worked on its own cost, and then we are going to submit the total budget to the cluster minister. So I think the issue of cyber then is I've responded to it, Chair. The issue of exiting, dealing with exiting members. Again, this is also a challenge in all government departments because the budget cuts affect all government departments. The Minister of Public Service and Administration is going to be working with National Treasury to come up with a strategy that will guide all departments on how to deal with the issue of making sure that the budget bill, the HR bill is kept at the ceiling that is provided by National Treasury. So I can't comment more on that. We do in the department have MEM, but at a national government level, the FOSAT clusters, FOSAT members, which is DGs, all sit together. They are aware of the program. They have established a task team that is led by DPSA to work on the guidance that will be provided to all government departments on this matter of dealing with HR budgets and exiting people if there is a need to exit people and how that should be done. And let me, I'm not going to comment on the flying hours and sea hours. I'll give it to DPLAN, Director Planning, General Pundu, to comment on the reduction of output. But what I want to just make a general statement is that what we are planning here, we are not planning pie in the sky. We are planning as resourced. So what you see here is what is resourced. And what is not resourced, we are not allowed to put it on in the plan. So HR will respond on the 2,000 that is on slide 12, those 2,000 youth that Member Kamede has indicated. What I should indicate here is that if you look at the employment of youth again, we are supporting the Department of Rural Development, and we are only providing a module, a character building module. So that 2,000 youth is not our youth, is what we will be training or providing that a character building module to. Obviously, we use our infrastructure and we use our resources, but again, it's at a cost recovery, it's on a cost recovery basis with the Department of Rural Development. But I'll ask General Kundu to respond on matters of the reduction on output. General.
Thank you, Chairperson. Probably I should start an attempt on the National Youth development where we are talking about whether it is achievable to train through 2,000 youth. And I want to argue that it is very much achievable. And in fact, when we present the annual report to the portfolio committee, it will become very clear that we have doubled this number in terms of achievement. We will recall that we make use of our spare capacity in respect of trainers or instructors. We have had an increase on that capacity due to the fact that the training that is happening in the General Military Assistance Operations in the DRC, training the DRC forces, has been scaled down, so that those instructors are then available and they can be used, and indeed they have been used. Then secondly, on the reduction of the flying hours and even hours at sea, probably I must just provide a caveat. The caveat is that the Department of Defense and the Defense Force is an instrument of government and therefore indebted to the guidelines and guidance by the government, particularly on planning, programming, and risk management. We are regulated by not only the PFMA, but the resultant National Treasury regulations as well as the frameworks in terms of how does government, including the DOD, conducts its business. In this particular case, there is a trilateral arrangement with National Treasury and the Presidency, so on selected performance indicators, whether we're going to reduce or increase them. We have had such an engagement, and they do understand. In terms of the flying hours, so to speak, the baseline information will reveal that probably we have not been achieving the 5,000 threshold, flying hours threshold. But we are remarkably increasing and developing to that level. The annual report, for instance, will reflect that we have achieved more than 4,000. In the previous year, we had achieved about 3,800. So we are going there, and we have convinced the trilateral participants that to reduce this below this will compromise the system's integrity of both the air combat air capability as well as the maritime capabilities. The annual report will also reflect likewise in the with regard to sea hours. We have achieved quite nearer to the threshold on hours at sea. If so, the chairperson, I could also talk on border safeguarding. Yes, there was a lot of questions that deal with border safeguarding from different honorable members. The first one is that our role on border safeguarding is, in the context of what the government is doing, is to develop and promulgate a border safeguarding strategy, which is in progress. Secondly, in the context of the initiatives of the PMA, the training of the Coast Guard, the Air Guard, and so on, those entities that are responsible must still work out how would they like these people to be trained, what is the curriculum, and so to speak, and then approach the department. And as of when we are being approached with the department, I foresee that there will be work groups to work out that, and we will determine our involvement. In respect of 15 subunits on the borderline, that means on the ground, and some other subunits which are at the background, I think the Honorable Member has got a much more realistic appreciation of the rotation system. We call it relief in the line, because we do not want a situation where there's a void in the borderline. You'd like, as this 15 subunit is growing, there's already another footprint in the borderline. The approach of 1:3, as our rotation system then applies. We have got 15 subunits on the borderline. We have got 15 subunits that are being prepared. We have got 15 subunits equivalent that are addressed or at best doing their normal forced development processes like your training, your formal training courses as well as forced training. There has been, if I may talk to the defense attachés, as well as the reduction of the output of the military police with regard to fraud and corruption. Within the caveat that has been articulated by the acting SecDef, he has said one of the norms and standards provided by government in respect of planning and budgeting is that the annual performance plan reflects funded outputs. So what we see in the plan is those outputs that the department could afford to fund. However, what the presentation has done is to reflect on the deficit, which is equal to that 36 billion. Obviously, if you needed to do ideally this and then you can only do this, the impact will be negative. But the plan then needs to come up with creative measures to make sure that you ameliorate the negative impact. And those creative measures will be, for instance, making sure that with the current footprint of 42 defense attachés, you accredit them to more than one country within what is allowed by geographic proximity. And that is what the department has done, so that it has not lost anything in terms of those two defense attaché offices that have not been established. And the last one for me will then be, second last, fraud and corruption. The command and cadre of the department is very serious on fraud and corruption. We have got an anti-fraud and corruption strategy that guides and coordinates the actions and the interventions of the department with regard to fraud and corruption. We have established a nodal point that consists of all the participants, right from managing whistleblowing from the national hotline, our own whistleblowing, forensic investigation in the defense inspectorate environment. And then within the value chain, the next one then becomes the military police for investigation, leading us to successful prosecution or conviction by the legal services or adjutant general. On this, if you look at the annual performance plan, you will see that there are indicators. Safe to say, if you look at the long-term infrastructure plan, you can look at the APP, I'm now talking about facilities and state of our bases. There is a comprehensive long-term infrastructure plan, which is Annexure E, of the APP from page 203 to page 216. It gives you what's the description of what needs to be done in that particular facility, what are the funds, corresponding funds in different financial years. So as far as I'm concerned, everything is clear. On reserve person days and the reduction, in the annual report you will see that we have achieved all what we wanted to achieve with almost 2.7 million reserve person days. And therefore 2.7 is what we need to utilize, to consume towards utilization of reserves. You also recall that the department has some sort of a reprieve on the utilization of reserves. An example, the withdrawal from Sudan means now much more forces are available even for utilization in the border safeguarding function. Acting SecDef, unless there's any other one that I'm forgetting.
Thank you, General. The Chair, the Member Committee also raised the issue of including the Deputy Minister in the structure. We'll look at that. The NHI, National Insurance, yes, National Health Insurance. We're not saying it is a challenge. We are not saying it's a challenge. We were saying it might impact or it will impact, but we don't want to use will, it might impact on us because there might be no minimum standards that will be prescribed. So our facilities will have to, if they don't meet the standards, then we'll have to upgrade in order for them to meet the standards. So because we are scanning we were just showing that as one factor that might impact on us in the future. So we are prepared to implement that when it's implemented. That's just what we were showing. And the issue of the local procurement policy, the member Gamete also indicated that we need to include the or to specify the designated groups in the policy. We take that. What this policy will do is to, of course, guide how we are going to deal with the issue of local procurement. The important there is that you want to develop the communities where our bases are, so you want our bases to procure locally, if possible, rather than to procure over long distances. So we'll make sure that the policy does address those imperatives that have been raised by the member. And we do also have a fraud and corruption, just to indicate a fraud and corruption plan, because it is required by National Treasury that we have that. So we do have it in the department. But we also have fraud and corruption in our risk register, so that we have clear actions of what we do in order to prevent that. And once it happens, of course, how you will then deal with that decisively. I will ask the CFO, though, I know that we've been speaking every time we come here about the payment of suppliers in 30 days. And the situation has not changed, but what I can indicate is that we are actually reaching the target. But the CFO should just elaborate on what we are doing.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Chairperson. The issue of payment for suppliers within the region, it is a very sensitive issue. I understand why the members are so frustrated when it comes to that. The problem that is there in the DOD, as the members was alluded to it, in terms of the legacy system, the major problem is on the legacy system, because you'll find that on the legacy system that we are using, it's not compatible fully with the requirement of the PSMA. Those are the challenges that we are having. What we have done in the DOD, we form the committees of all the relevant stakeholders, including, because the major backlog is on the medical side. It's on the medical side, because when the doctor attending to people. Now, on a monthly basis, we normally meet and then want to find out what is the improvement, and we also capacitated the medical side with an additional people to make sure that those invoices get implemented as soon as possible. But I believe that as soon as the issue of the system is get resolved, we might able to see the better results. Really, at the moment, the Chairperson, we are trying by all means to make sure that we are paying all the invoices within 30 days. I know that the members will like to see 100%, of which at this point in time, it will be difficult. It is difficult for us to achieve 100%. That is the challenge that we are having at the moment.
we got a task team that was set by the FOSAT, which is the committee of DGs, to say, let's go and assist the DOD, because at that level, it was an assumption that, you know, it's a matter of human nature not to pay. But when the team was arrived, which it was made of the people from the DPSA, Department of Monitoring and Evaluation, Treasury, and ourselves, when we started to explain to them the problem that we are facing, everybody was realized that the problem is bigger than we thought. The problem is bigger than we thought. Okay, that's where. But after that, we did not just sit as a DOD. We engaged with the Treasury, the team that is working on the IFMS, to say, can they use DOD as a pilot of the new system, so that we will make sure that whatever problem that it encountered for, it can be addressed. That's what we are doing. But as long as, I need to highlight this, as long as we're still using the system that we are using, Chairperson, we might not see the 100%. Sometime, honorable members, I need to highlight that sometime if you are saying one need to choose what, if we look, when all other departments were moving to the new system, which is best and logist, the DOD did not move. The DOD did not move. I don't know what was the reason there of not moving. But the FMS, the system that we are using, was not meant to cater for the requirement of the PFMA. Was not meant to, that system. If you look to the system itself, Jefferson, it's 33 years old. It's from 1983. Now, at that time, when that system was implemented, it was just an income and expenditure. Not all these requirements. But as a DOD, we are trying by all means, most of the things, you're ending up doing manually. Which is a challenge. So that's why we are saying we would like to be on the pilot project with National Treasury so that we can able to cover the gap. That's what is happening. Jefferson, I would like also to deal with the issue of the a lot of increases on the other program and the decreases of other program or unfortunately. Okay, let me wait for Member Isao for this. Okay.
Continue.
Okay. On this one, Chairperson, we must, if you look to the budget of the DOD, on the allocation of the DOD, for the past 5 years, it's been cut under the compensation, under the goods and services. We've been cut under the goods and services. When the budget is cut, and it's prescriptive as well to say, go and cut on this line. It's not us that we just think that, you know, we're going to cut here. It's prescriptive on other items. Now, you will find that this year the budget has been cut. If it's cut on that one, you might find a way of to say, okay, fine, if it's cut, how can I avoid not to incur the unauthorized expenditure on that particular line? Those are the challenges that we are having. But if you look at it at the end of the year, we normally do the violence in terms of the PFMA to say, okay, fine, let's shift the funds from this program to this program in order to avoid the unauthorized expenditure. Those are the things that is happening, Chairperson. The other thing, Chairperson, is in terms of the procurement policy, as the acting sector was saying. Even if the policy, we will come with the policy, but the policy will be guided by also the practitioners of National Treasury, because they are working on it at the moment. Our policy will be in line with what the National Treasury prescribed to us. That's where it is. Thank you.
Thank you. We will then address the are we deliberately planning for overexpenditure on HR?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. What I just want to members to understand that HR did not plan for overexpenditure. Members will remember that when the budget cut was announced, there was no... When the budget cut was announced was on the 19th of January 2016. And it's cutting compensation of employee budget of members who are already in the employ of the SANDF. And at the same time, the letter of allocation has certain paragraphs that it was addressing this matter by saying that the Minister of Finance and Public Service and Administration will announce stringent measures to manage personnel expenditure and to develop tools to assist departments to reduce personnel numbers in the 2017-18 and 2018-19. I want the members to just understand to date those tools have not yet been developed and we have not yet been even given those guidelines. But the department, we did engage National Treasury subsequent to the letter of allocation through the MTEC period, through the MTEC hearing. I remember on the 16th, I think we went to National Treasury on the 16th and then also on the 22nd of May and also on the 23rd of May 2016, discussing exit mechanism, trying to explain as to how we are going to go about exiting members. Also requesting National Treasury that it is impossible for the department to exit numbers of that nature. Are 4,000 members at once. Members whom we have already employed, renew their contracts and all of that. We explain that this is also going to border on contravening other legislation that we needed to also comply with. And this is what we're talking about. We are talking about human beings, and there's also labor relations legislation. And it is a process in these two exit members. It is not a once-off thing. So this is this discussion which took place on the 23rd, and also discussing the method of the funding thereof. Because even exiting members themselves would require that we have additional money to exit, because those we are talking about packages. So this tool was not developed. However, National Treasury promised that they will come back, and then they will come back to us and try and deal with this matter. And what we can also highlight to members that we have not come to any agreement with National Treasury as to how it's going to be implemented. We don't have money. We need to be able to understand what will be the packages and what type of, we need to even develop some kind of rule that will be national rule that will be put in place. That will guide this process. Other than that, I just want members to understand that we did not plan for this. And we also highlighted the requirement that the SNDF versus its outer commitments and other risks that are associated with the cutting of human resources.
that the SNDF will still be required to continue rejuvenating its force and by continuously recruiting according to the need, the requirement, just to replace natural attrition. And we indicated that we'll maintain the numbers. There might be a slight decrease in terms of the numbers that we do have currently. Up until such time that there should be a decision that will be made, I think, by government and parliament as to how to go about with this problem that the SNDF is faced with. In terms of the numbers that is to be reduced, in terms of the ordered commitments that are there that we still have to maintain, and also in terms of the fact that we are now, because of budget cuts, as India, going to have an unauthorized expenditure. So this discussion is still continuing, and we are trying to engage National Treasury in terms of trying to make sure that we comply and conform with it.
Thank you, Chair. The directive that was given by National Treasury goes back a number of years. The directive read 10,000 soldiers need to exit. And also part of milestone one, it is a necessity that the force be reduced to 72,000 in order for rejuvenation and other things to take place as milestone one, which means when we argue on this basis that we cannot exit people now, it's contrary to milestone one and the planning of the defense review. So it doesn't make sense, Honorable Chair, that we have put certain whole commissions in place to investigate the matter, come up with solutions for us, but we cannot implement it.
Thank you very much. I was just going to say in the problem is that National Treasury imposed budget cuts before the planning and of the defense review was concluded. This is where the problem is, because the milestone one, in terms of the trajectory, is we're talking year one, year two, and year three. We're not talking necessarily which year should necessarily be said. We needed to have a plan. We needed to make sure that it's funded. National Treasury did not fund. Yes, they have not yet funded the defense review. It's not funded. Including the reduction itself, it is a process. It needed to be planned for. So there was no way that my stone one was going to be implemented with the budget cuts announced last year, January, and the SNDF before the defense review plans they were in place. And then we have already undertaken as to when is it going to take place, because we need to guide National Treasury in terms of when we're going to start exiting members, at what time, and we need to do it in a lawful manner and also in a procedural manner. And that's what we are discussing with National Treasury. And thereafter, the funding of that plan also needed to be discussed and when it's going to commence. So here we are dealing with a situation where it was not. It's a process. That is a matter of coordination and process.
Thank you. You want to make me follow up on another comment?
Yes, Chair. If you could go to the slide on the allocation of the budget, the one that was there just before. The one for budget. Yeah. You know, I still am not convinced. You know, you've got allocation for 1718. Allocated, so let's take the landward defense. You are allocated 16. And you know the cost is 39. Why don't you then budget on what you've been allocated? It's there, you know. It's there. I mean, there's no way that we'll get this difference of 22. So that we just sort of try
more smoothly.
And this thing is going to continue in the MTF year. It's better than if then there's a variment, as the CFO was saying, in taking some money for the following year and try to cover that deficit. I just want that convincing.
The over expenditure is not going to be on goods and services. The over expenditure that we have indicated is over expenditure on HR. What we are showing here is a shortfall on current commitments, but we are planning our output in line with what we can give, in other words, in line with the amount of money that we have. But we don't want to say to pretend that the targets and outputs that we have are, if we had money, we would have that. If we had more money, we would have more outputs. So we have designed our outputs in line with what we have. So we are showing the members a deficit there. Not that we are going to overexpend by that. We are going to over, there is a projected over expenditure on HR only, and that is because of budget cuts that have been imposed by National Treasury.
That just your, indicates that your presentation is not simple for members, as you said. You have
okay.
Time is up. You have my watch is 23 minutes past 12. And then I must wrap up this meeting by 12:30. I take 2 minutes for myself. The remainder is yours. Can you wrap up?
Yeah, I was thinking that you'll have the whole afternoon for us. Some of this, may I say that to members, we will analyze your questions and then we can respond in writing. The funding model, although we did respond about it at the Joint Standing Committee, just for the record to PCD, we are working on a funding model. We almost done. I can't give a date, but we will definitely come back to members and present. We haven't presented the costed plan to this committee. So maybe members can invite us to come and present the costed plan to the members. And the funding model, as soon as it is ready, I did indicate at the other meeting that we are still working on it. Our minister did indicate that it's taken quite a long time. I agree. But as soon as it's ready, members will come and present it. It will sort of demystify some of the things that are not clear now about where we're going to get funding and how we plan to fund the defense review.
Thank you. Okay, thank you very much. Honorable members, I think that is now we must not lose sight of one factor. We are not taking quarterly reports from you. You are presenting your annual performance plan, saying to us, in this financial year, we want you to oversight us on this, right? Now, in that interaction, members wanted clarity. They also made recommendations in terms of what are the critical requirements of the Defense Force in order, or the department, in order to achieve your constitutional mandate within the limited resources, in terms of personnel, morale of soldiers, equipment, internal obligations, so on. And from that, you need to go and reprioritize. You just talked about the remedial the remedial action that you can take CFO, like the environment. So those, now you must separate between the points of clarity that members wanted and areas that should be pre-prioritized. You answered Honorable Isao's question about increasing and decreasing.
see, say, look, we have remedies for that. We want to see those remedies. And that, honorable members, in order for us to support you, honorable members, I suggest those will be factors in our reports, in the budget board reports, because as they now, when you come back to us, when you do your quarterly report, we'll want you to tell us about those areas of reprivatization. What did you do? What environment did you, as you said, what environment have you done? And so on. So then we'll be having our own dashboard again, honorable member, on what you recommended and so on. Will that be fine with us, honorable member? Thank you very much. Then we want all those things to be reflected in our form and recommend. I think we have exhausted our issues for today. Yeah.